And then I'm gonna not do anything for a second as I take off my sweatshirt.
You're wearing something underneath
Oh
that sweatshirt, right? Okay, good,
boy,
good, good.
yeah. Oh, now he's
Okay. I was
camouflaged.
like, yeah, there's like a
Chris,
nude thing now in the podcast. Did we not mention that?
right? Chris is, he now looks like he's going hunting in the marsh living
Yeah.
behind him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh
Okay.
man, I hope this is
My
being
Tetons
recorded.
photo.
I
It
hope you
is.
can use that as one of the clips leading in.
Generally, if it's embarrassing to me, I normally don't use it as an
Only if it's
intro.
yeah, only if it's embarrassing to me. Thank you.
It's like, well, you want to start editing
No,
the
no, no. I when I'm done with school, we can talk about this. But until then, I'm
Oh.
yeah, 15 to 20 hours of schoolwork a week, so
Well,
that's
sweet.
enough.
Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
I'm Micah.
He brings way
I'm
more
also too
energy than
enthusiastic. Sorry about that.
So
I was just
much
saying, you
energy.
bring way more energy than Jeff Glucker does
Seriously.
because he was like, hello, and did
Yeah.
nothing.
I
So the next time you see Jeff, you're gonna have to give
will.
him a hard time about it.
Well.
Yeah, this is our show about anything and everything off-road. Technically,
And on
helicopters
road.
count as off-road because they're not on the ground. So They're the
we can
ultimate
definitely.
off-roader.
Yeah,
We can definitely do helicopter talk again. We're still socially
Until
distanced.
space shuttle comes into play.
Well, great. Now I've got a new goal for 2023.
Is the Mars rover
What?
the ultimate
Yeah.
off-roader?
I mean, it's the
It's a
only moving device that actively uses solar panels to navigate
yeah.
itself. So,
There's the Jalopnik title, and the whole article is
yes. No. Anyway, this is our show. Ross is still in the Northeast. I'm in the Midwest. Mike is in California.
Well, maybe if I'm in California, I could possibly record something with some people in the next couple weeks. We could talk about this off air,
That
but
definitely sounds like after the show conversation.
yes. Sorry. It just occurred to me. Like we've been talking about me going to California for a couple weeks now, and now the plans are in place and the possibility of seeing people. So we'll talk about that. Things to talk about on my end. The Ram Rebel 2500 is a vehicle I have been spending time with.
We teased it last episode that you because you had just gotten it, but now you've had like a little more time with it.
Yeah.
Not small.
Not small. So I can state the most captain obvious thing of all time and say it is not well suited to city driving. That said, it somehow feels smaller than the GM 2500s. I think most of that is greenhouse related. And yes, this picture that Chris is showing is it absolutely towering over my lifted Lexus. It is a monster of a vehicle. I'm 5'10. I have to like step up into it and pull myself up with the steering wheel. And yeah, the craziest thing about it is it doesn't drive as tall or big as it is. Like Ram has this amazing thing where they somehow make pickups shrink when you're on the road until you come to a construction zone and have to sneak between two cones and not have the dude standing there with a flag. But so I have my qualms with the Goodyear DuraTracks. We've discussed this at length. I think they're the wrong tire for this. I think they're the wrong tire for 99% of the vehicle applications, but I think they're running out the DuraTrack the same way they ran out the original BF Goodrich Mud Terrain on like the JK Wrangler. So wrong tire for the truck, but it rides so well for something this big. Like it's wild. I remember in probably 2005 when my dad was looking at 2500s, we went and we drove a Ram 2500 at the time, and it rode like a dump truck, like a horrible, horrible ride quality. And honestly, it rides better over some of the bumps here than my Lexus does, which is crazy considering I think the wheels are 20s, and it weighs a metric fuck ton, let's be real. So
What's the Lexus run? 18s?
the Lexus on 17s, yeah,
17s. Okay.
seven, but it's fairly stiffly sprung because of, you know, all the stuff I've added to it. So yeah, other things about the Rebel, stuff I've never experienced in a pickup before. It has power extending mirrors, so you don't have to get out and pull the mirrors out. You push a button and push left and it extends the mirror out, or right. It is, and the same thing with the little, you know, they have the big 2500 and 3500s now have the main mirror, and they have the little towing mirror, like the like backup and rear tire mirror, and those are powered too, which is crazy. So yeah, it's for 90 something grand, it's a lot of truck. But
is it really $90,000?
This one has, obviously it's a press truck, so it's got all the options. It really, really makes me question the people who overland and off-road power wagons, like wonder about their sanity and their mechanical sympathy, and also their general own size relative to the vehicle that they're driving. Because I just can't fathom off-roading stuff. Like the power wagon's the same size, you know, and the real difference is this is a little more street oriented, and the power wagon's slightly more trail oriented, but there's, on no planet could you take this down the trails in the Northeast and not damage the trails or the truck. So
I don't think you have to limit it to the Northeast, man. I think it's most trails are probably too tight for that truck.
I'll quickly interject that we had a Ram 1500 press truck recently from my YouTube channel, and we observed the exact same thing, like kind of shockingly good ride quality. And every time we review a car as a family, I have my wife drive, and she is innately intimidated by large vehicles, and she found the Ram 1500 to be very manageable. Granted, it's not 2500 size, but it's still a big vehicle. And there is something about, maybe it's the sight picture, maybe it's about like daylight opening, maybe it's just about how you interact, like how the switch gear is arranged, whatever it is, there's something psychologically happening where it feels smaller than it actually is. And you know that's the case because my wife's deep intimidation related to driving big vehicles didn't really manifest when we were driving the 1500. Ram's doing some stuff that's right.
So I have so much seat time in all of these pickups now. Part of it is the way the Ram's hood falls away in the front versus it's curved and then it breaks and then it's curved and then it falls off on the sides versus the Chevys and the Fords is just flat and flat. And it's like they're, you have squared off sight lines and nothing else. And the Rams, at least you have, it kind of mimics like a Wrangler hood line in some sense, you know, and it just gives you a better perspective of things. It's also pitched downward. It's all, there's intricacies, but yeah, it, the Rams drive of all of the pickups, including, in my opinion, the Ridgeline, the 1500 Ram with coils and the air suspension and the smallest wheels you can get, is the best riding of all of them. And
yeah,
2500 rides really well. It sounds like a fucking 18 wheeler. it's great, but yeah.
Well,
so that's
it has the engine that we all wish the Power Wagon had, right? It's got the big diesel Cummins engine in it, like, yes. Power Wagon's only gas.
Yes. So many people say it would go against the Power Wagon mantra, like it would put too much weight up front, it would ruin the ground clearance at the front and compromise the skids and whatnot, but they should have just like put the Eco Diesel in the Power Wagon and called it, you know, just like beefed it up a little bit. So yeah, so that's it with the Rebel for now. Only other developments, things on my end, possibly getting closer to playing around on motorized two wheels in the dirt.
So, okay.
Yep, had a conversation with somebody today, and we'll revisit this, but after 20 years on ATVs, I may finally be trying two wheels. Bike stuff, yeah. So,
how's your back feel about that?
Honestly, I don't think, aside from the falling factor, which, you know, you fall off an ATV, the chance is you have 900 pounds of ATV land on you, which is really not good. I think it's a wash because okay. on the quad, you know, there's four tires to provide upward impact into your spine at all times. And on two wheels, it's 50% of the, it's going to be a
learning. I'm with Micah immediately on, I don't think that math stacks up.
Homie, if
I think
it
you're
was
doubling the amount of impact, not halving it.
if I was purely focusing on the prospect of my spine, I wouldn't be doing any of this.
That's true. I was worried about your spine.
I appreciate that and thank you, but I wouldn't be off-roading in any capacity if my spine was, you know, a main factor in this. But, you know, life's worth living. And if I end up fucked again, then keep on keeping on. So, but your updates are much more exciting because you have ordered parts.
I did order parts. So for Micah's reference, we have an overland trip coming up end of March, early April in Moab. Ross's GX is too far away. Otherwise, I would borrow that. But it's
so
like
this stage, we were graciously invited by Rogue Overland to podcast the Rogue Overland Rally.
Super cool. That sounds like a good time.
So Ross's GX was out. It's too far away. I was thinking about the Suburban, but every video I've watched of every trail that they're going to potentially have us down, it's all a hard pass. Way too much overhang in the back, way too much breakover angle underneath. Just, and also
turtle.
Aftermarket for 2017 and to 20 Suburbans just isn't there. Like, it's not trying to find a selection of skids or whatever. So the trusty 2008 Toyota Sequoia is potentially getting armored up. I did place my order today.
So the potential part of this is sale.
It still has to arrive, Ross. It still has to get here. Like, I understand. Like, I'm definitely aware. Okay. I'm hedging that. I'm trying not to anger the logistical gods by hedging my conversation.
You
don't
want to put that out there in the universe.
Exactly. And there's not enough wood sitting near me to touch right now. Okay. Did that. So front skid plate. Man. Transmission and transfer case skid plate, fuel tank skid plate, rear diff skid plate, and then sliders. The sliders are weld on, but already my buddy who is going to help me mount most of this was like, maybe we could just bolt them on. I'm like, Ron? We'll talk. Yeah, Ron immediately was like, he's an engineer. So he's like, how can we engineer this stuff? Like, that's literally where his brain goes all the time. I think the only thing that I have left to figure out is I want to get a hitch mounted shackle for the back of the truck. It has tow hooks on the front of it. It just needs, I want to have something on the back just in case something happens. As long as I have it, I don't get stuck, hopefully.
It has a like a real hitch, like a class three hitch. So get a combo hitch skid with the shackle that comes through the middle.
You're gonna have to send me some links because I don't know how to Google search that one.
I got you. Don't worry.
The ones I found are just hitch mounted with the shackle that hangs off the end of it. So there was no other skid type apparatus that I've seen there. I may just have to send Andy an email and say, "Teach me things, Andy."
Yeah.
Andy from Warren. But yeah, that's it. So it's already got Toyo Open Country AT3s on the truck. I put Tundra TRD wheels on it, 2 years ago? So it looks hilarious because it's from 2008, but it looks like, until we got the latest generation of Sequoia, it looks like it was a brand new Sequoia. Because nobody can tell the body style that it's from 2008. So, I got a Midland radio, I still need to get into it, and the Toyos, and that's it. And we're gonna go.
Then you're good.
Probably trim some plastic off the bumpers just in case.
Yeah.
We'll see.
A little cutoff wheel never hurt anybody.
My wife doesn't listen to the show, so it's her daily driver. I don't think she's going to be that upset if she has more clearance. Oh,
man. You know, we could, for the sake of not saying viral, we could have the video with her walking out into the garage and you being like, what? And there's just half the bumper on the ground.
We've already been discussing that, like, she likes driving the truck, but we do need our oldest needs to start driving this summer because he goes to high school across town, and I'm tired of, it's very nice spending time with him, but like the hour every day getting over and back. Yeah. Like I want that hour back. And eventually teenagers have to grow up and move out anyway. So we might as well start that, ripping the bandaid off of that process. Mm-hmm. The Sequoia is probably getting passed down to him. So the more we kind of armor it and make it look cool, he's going to be on board, and maybe it'll make her be like, yeah, I do need something different. Cause really she, we have two SUVs that will sit seven people. We probably don't need that many. and if we're passing it down to him, it would still be the, an emergency. If we all have to pile into it, we have that one there. So we could get her something that's a little more reasonable. Maybe 4Runner-ish. She does miss her.
Still?
She misses that old V8 4Runner. I know I can't replace the engine, but I can definitely, she just loves them. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
We'll talk about that. I have ideas that start with GX and run with GX.
Yeah, she's, she, how did she phrase it one day? I don't want to drive a fucking Lexus, I think is what the phrase was.
Oh, me either, but I do. So
she's, I love her to death. She can be as bougie as she wants to be, but for whatever reason, when she sees that L badge on the front of the vehicle, she's like, mm-mm.
Mm-hmm. I'm
like, okay.
There's
fancy Toyota. Nope. Doesn't want to hear it.
There's a reason that Prado conversion kits exist.
Yes. She, yeah.
And they cost as much as a fourth gen 4Runner.
Exactly. So I know fourth gen's out for us, so it would have to be fifth gen, but
yeah. So yeah. Speaking of GX460s, Micah recently posted a little picture of a GX460 next to a 4xe Rubicon. So I want to talk about
that.
Let's kick this off with that.
Yeah. So, gosh, I feel like I'm in a really awkward space here because, so we have the GX and we just happen to have the 4xe, and I thought that they couldn't be kind of further apart on the spectrum in that, the GX is,
thank
so
you, Lynn, for the
old
comment on this.
Yeah. It's like incredible. Yeah, there we go. Incredibly dated, kind of like almost comically dated. And it sort of encapsulates what Toyota and Lexus people are all about, which is like, this is a proven technology. I don't want it to change. I want quite literally the exact same engine that was in the vehicle when it was launched in 2010. And then by contrast, the 4xe is like the sort of shaky house of cards of owning a Stellantis product, but with more technology crammed inside of it. And it's like, in terms of like just pure, you know, the thing's not going to break, they're kind of on, again, opposite ends of that spectrum. And then also the pricing difference between the two of them isn't nearly as much as you might expect. So
people think Wranglers are cheap. Like,
oh my god,
the general public still assumes doors come off, roof comes off, cloth interior for the most part, like it's a Jeep.
Wait,
you know,
that was less than like $5,000 difference between a Lexus and a Jeep.
The Jeep is more expensive to clarify.
Yeah, I was just saying. Yeah. My gosh.
Yeah. Fun fact, the Jeep Wrangler 4xe that we had here is literally twice the price of a base two-door Wrangler. So, like, here's where you get in at. And then you're going to want to more than double that if you want to get into the one that we were driving. Interesting comparison.
Call that,
I feel like I know what you guys would go with.
Yeah. We call the double the base price the Hellcat effect. Honestly though, and you've spent time with them, so you know, call me out, I haven't driven a 4xe, but the 4xe in concept seems amazing. You know, it's what, 25 ish miles of electric range,
21 and, according to the TikTok that was
21
there.
Okay. Yes. Obviously my reading
good
skills, reading skills have exceeded, but yeah, no, that amount of electric range for what the Wrangler is best suited to in terms of the buyer, you know, each vehicle or somebody who has like a short commute and then just takes it on longer trips when they're going into the woods and uses the gas engine the way people use gas engines in the Chevy Volt on longer trips, it makes all the sense in the world. The reality of the complications of that drivetrain and Stellantis quality, is that the word for it?
Sorry, you got to make the air quotes.
Yeah, I'm trying so hard to be nice because I love Jeep. I love Ram and I love Dodge. You know, I just, there's always the question. And it's a really world, really weird world we live in where a Wrangler is comparably priced to, you know, Lex's second highest tier big SUV, big 4x4 with a V8. And you also recently spent time with the LX600, which, mm-hmm. I mean, a base LX600 is kind of in the same pricing ballpark as a 392 Wrangler, you know?
Yeah, the one we drove was $106,000. Base price is right about 88. But I, just real quick on the 4xe, what I really do like about it is that it is 100% a Wrangler Rubicon. Also, it is electrified. Mm-hmm. It loses none of what it takes or what it means to be a Rubicon, though it does add a fair bit of weight. But I found we've got a couple of pretty nifty trails around us. One we dub Museo Hill is the kind of thing you only take something that has like lockers on. And it blasted up that thing with zero effort. It was just the sheer effortlessness of that that vehicle's capability, and then also the ability to kind of choose when you want to exploit that electric ability, the sneaking mm-hmm. into camp you know, quietly, or kind of I've had this actually, like you know, ride my e-bike around here where you can sneak up on nature and like kind of like, oh my gosh, there's a bunch of deer there, and that possibility is much greater if you're driving electrified. And also mm-hmm. yeah, just for like daily commute, that ability to plug it in, charging is no big deal. You could just use it like a normal outlet and it'll charge up, you know, in like 12 hours overnight. I found it really like enjoyable to live with, but there's also the variables there. It's like you're adding one element of technology on, again, a pile of technology. And it's like, right. I don't know. I feel like Lexus has had more than a decade to have this thing sorted. And I feel really confident that there's just only so much that can go wrong with a platform that's that old. Right. I just got to say too, that driving that GX, it's funny because like the numbers are hilariously bad for a new vehicle. It's like, oh, the 0-60 time is literally slower than the new Prius. Did you know that? Like the new Prius,
but the new Prius looks good and the GX still doesn't. And I said that.
Yeah, but it's just, yeah, it's just funny though. Cause you got like, yeah, what's that thing got on the hood? 4.6 liter V8. Is it faster than a Prius? No.
Nope. How many miles per gallon do you get?
But yeah, maybe. It was fun going back and forth between the two. And I also realized in that post, there's a lot of GX love out there.
It has come into its own. And that is, it's the same way things have happened with the 5th Gen 4Runner. You know, there was almost no love for the 5th Gen 4Runner until probably 2016, maybe let's call it 2018. And then everybody realized like the difference in charm, you know, and for most people, charm is either a Wrangler with, you know, a totally different personality from anything else on the road, or the charm of something you can almost to a fault get in, not almost to a fault, definitely to a fault, because they're boring as fuck, get in every single day mm-hmm. and not ever question if it's going to start or get you to where you need to go. And that's the, you know, the 4Runner, and that's the GX. And I think as GX has priced itself downwards past where the 4Runner is, the GX community has, or the overlanding community that would otherwise start to buy something like a Wrangler, in realizing how much a new Wrangler is going, wait a minute, I can get this other thing that is not going to break or, you know, die in the next few years. And yeah, that's where the GX love comes from. And frankly, that's why I own one. Like I placed an order for a JL Wrangler. What was that, 2 years ago? Now, Chris?
I didn't know that you'd actually placed it.
Oh no, I placed it.
We were discussing.
No, I placed the order and the dealer offered 7% under invoice because they were getting kickbacks from Stellantis. And I decided not to take the order because we bought a house and Then I went out and bought a CPO GX for $7,000 less than the Wrangler, you know. And
I think there's a point there, though, which is that I think a lot of the GX love that I've seen comes from people that think of it in terms of like a used buy. Mm-hmm. Whereas I was driving a brand new one, and like a vehicle that's being sold in 2023 with like a 6-speed automatic transmission and a CD player and mysteriously mm-hmm. thin A-pillars that let you know it was built a decade ago. It's like, that feels like a bit of a stretch, at least for my tastes. But yeah. If you're thinking about like a used overlanding platform, then it starts to make a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So in terms of how the 4xe experience lent itself to the future, knowing that there's it's called Recon, right? The upcoming all electric Jeep that's like a Wrangler equivalent.
Is
it called Recon?
I think it's called Recon.
Is it? Let me see.
Yeah, that. It is.
And it's got
yeah,
removable yeah. sides, the same way the sides come off on the
the windows.
The windows come off. Oh god, I can't remember the name.
Doors.
The top on the JL, that the power top.
The One Touch.
Yes, Sky One Touch something. Not
Sky One Touch power top.
Yeah, so yeah. The sides presumably come off on this the same way they come off on that. But does the electric 4xe experience make you hopeful for the Recon, or are you becoming a skeptic? And also,
no, like I,
as a Bronco owner,
I think. Yeah, like honestly, I think hat tip to Stellantis and Jeep for introducing electrification way ahead of the curve versus like the Ford folk. And I'm sure there will be an electrified Bronco at some point, but they won't be first in that space. And I really like the powertrain. I thought it worked great. They did a good job too with that blending of the electrification and the gasoline powertrain. Felt relatively seamless. I did notice every once in a while, kind of a weird clunking sensation, like coming to a stop, just like a little like, I don't know what that is. I'll just chop that up to like Jeep charm, getting back to the charm concept. But yeah, drive, I think if you take loss. That same, yes, exactly. If you take that exact same powertrain approach and you apply that to the Recon EV, which I think is a very good looking SUV, yeah, I think it's an additive thing to what is already a beloved package. By the way, we did have that Sky One Touch power top on our Wrangler 4xe tester, and the just push a button and the open air experience, and then the rear windows removed with just like those two latches. It is so easy to get that thing naked. It's great. Also, that's that power top costs $100. Still very cool.
When I took one from Connecticut down to like South Jersey a couple years ago, and it was $3,900 for that roof at the time. I was like, I don't think this is worth it. And we drove through the Pine Barrens long before I had watched The Sopranos, and pushed the button, and like the whole roof goes back. And you're like, oh yeah, okay, this is if you buy this is $3,900 well spent, especially considering $3,900 for that on top of the prices of modern Wranglers is like, you know, pennies per month. But
dude, it really does air it out once you get the doors off as well. Like it's with the roof open. I feel bad that the rear glass is there. Like,
yeah. Yeah, but if you look there, the one aspect of driving the Jeep Wrangler 4xe that jumped out to me, though, is the crossbar that goes over the front occupants' heads. And that's, that is an aspect of Bronco ownership that I very much appreciate, in that there is no crossbar there. So it is a completely open section rather than having that cross member. I actually really like that part of the Bronco experience. You know, it's not like it's a competition for who can be the most open air, but if you're looking up, the Bronco is a little bit of a winner there. But yeah, I really appreciate just that easy modularity of the Wrangler platform. Really good.
So natural transition here. How's the let's talk Bronco. So first of all, are you taking the roof off the Bronco enough to really enjoy and benefit from that extra piece that's not there, and also tell us about Bronco updates and upgrades and how it's been.
Okay. So, to answer your first question, absolutely. Our original intent when we bought the Bronco was that we were going to buy a white hardtop at some point, whenever that became available. And what we've discovered is that for where we live, buying the hardtop is completely unnecessary for two reasons. One, it's really fucking expensive. And two, we don't have permafrost here. We're not always in winter. So being able to quickly flip the top back when the environment allows is really great. And we don't want to lose that. And because it's California, we have more opportunities to do that than you'd imagine. So yeah, we flip the roof back all the time. It's really quick and easy. Just going to pop, flip. And so, yeah, we're open air as much as possible, which is great. I do have a quick callback to the hitch mounted shackle discussion, which is that the most recent adventure we had was at in December. Oh, and it was right before New Year's Eve. I went out on a little bit of an off-roading adventure with some friends. Guy has an LR4. His buddy has a Tacoma. We went out just for like a quick little run around the trails up here. So we're driving back. It's raining. Snow's about to start. We're on some trails where it's like, you know, you need a truck to get around here. What do I spot? Volkswagen Golf. No joke. A Volkswagen Golf had made its way onto the trail. And I was like, hey, I think we saw a Golf. We passed them. And then when we were parked for a second, because there was a big puddle, and actually as little boys and grown-up bodies, we had to like blast on through the puddle while we were getting set up, the Golf went by. And it's like, it's so ludicrous to see a Golf on an off-road trail, like a true off-road trail. I guess they must know something.
What generation Golf are we talking
probably
about?
Like a 2017 or something like
okay,
like relatively recent, completely stock Volkswagen Golf on a trail where I have never seen anything that's not off-road oriented. And I'm like, I guess good for you, sir, for driving around in your apparently off-road capable Volkswagen Golf. So cut to maybe 15 minutes later on our way out after we've splashed and made a ruckus. The sun's going down. And I told my buddy Todd, I was like, hey, what do you want to bet we come across those people again? And sure enough, they were absolutely stuck. There's a hill. And what wound up happening is that I didn't know where they came from. I was like, I don't know where they're coming from, where they're going. And it turns out they drove down the trail. They couldn't get out. And so they were trying to go back the way they came in, and they simply couldn't do it. There was just this hill and a big rut and like a bit of an impediment. So what wound up happening is we had to pull them out. So I got to use the Bronco, borrowed buddy's shackle for the hitch. And part of my good deed, last good deed I did in 2022 was figure out where their eye bolt is so you can create a toe point through the front fascia and like kind of talk to people through like, okay, here's how this is going to go down. And, off the throttle, I'm going to pull you. I don't want you spinning tires and sliding sideways into that ditch and everything. And it was one of those dicey deals where like, if we hadn't have been there, that I don't know what they would have done. Cause it's like, there's no cell coverage. It's nighttime. It's beginning to snow. And like, I don't know how that would have played out. So
hike back to the road.
Long waves. Yeah. So they did make it back to the road. I towed them out. And then after that, I specifically bought a tow hitch mounted shackle,
nice.
Which is always in the Bronco now. And it was a good experience. So I guess that'd be the latest mod. And it was just odd. And what was the most unusual thing you guys have come across when you're off-roading?
Oh, man. See, I'm near Missouri and the Ozarks. I think it was the cockfighting ring that we discovered, where they have raised all of the like cocks in individual houses. Like, it was a trail, then there was an offshoot, and it was just like, what have we walked into and how fast can we get away?
You're still talking about it, so I'm starting to think it's not a joke. Is that a real thing?
Yeah, that was a real thing. That was with some family in Southern Missouri. We're down near the lake, and we were like, we were on like like before side-by-sides were fully a thing, it was like a Kubota and a John Deere Gator with a cooler of beers, as you do, because you're on trails.
Naturally.
Yeah, and discovered that, and we were like, we need to go.
That's wild.
I will, and I'm trying to just get a screenshot of this so I can send it to Chris.
Oh, no.
Do you remember when I took that F-Pace SVR off-road unnecessarily?
Yeah, because that was the same road you were going to drive the Hummer EV, and I asked you if the road was big enough for the Hummer EV because it looked like the Jag SVR was pretty big on that road, and that's not a small, not a big vehicle.
Well, in that state forest, as we found out when we came to a stop to just make sure that we weren't going to, you know, abuse the beautiful $100,000+ SVR, and I'm desperately trying to get this up on my screen so I can send it to you, is in the middle of a state forest in Massachusetts. Let's see, can I get the screenshot? Oh no, it's killed by the sun. The either Massachusetts or Northeast headquarters of the Hells Angels.
Oh,
with,
in a state forest.
In a state forest with Confederate flags and
Massachusetts.
Yeah, and you know, paraphernalia aplenty. And that, considering I've come across, you know, graveyards 100 miles from the nearest town or paved road up in Maine, seeing this really spooked me. So
we'll see that.
Okay, I'll take my Volkswagen any day then.
Yeah,
that's great.
The rural graveyard thing to me is that's kind of normal, just because it was pioneer country out here, so sometimes you come around a corner and there's 15 graves, like it's maybe one family or two families at the most, but yeah, that's a little more normal out
here. Well, you've bested me. We don't have that in California. No. Very few rural graveyards.
No, you left them all in Nevada or Colorado on the way out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why that game was so real.
Yeah, that's funny. By the way, rounding out the, if you guys were asking about Bronco mods, and philosophically, I'm not like, I don't want it to be like a SEMA build where it's just like, find all the stuff and add all the stuff. Like, that's not really what we're going for. So we're really targeted with what we got going on. But I mean, the most recent one would be like, we've swapped on some KO2s. We've officially become part of the KO2 cult. And like, that's kind of following up some major issues we had with those Thought Goodyears. You guys are, I think, much more tire guys than myself.
Oh, but the Thought Goodyears.
What's your interpretation of the fact that with the stock Sasquatch tires, we had so many tire slashes and so many tire problems that it was like, I literally was like entertaining the idea that perhaps our car was being sabotaged. I'm like, so, it's crazy, like slashes and stuff.
I haven't liked that tire on any vehicle that I have driven it on. And my experience with the Duratracs that we were talking about before that are on the Ram parked out front, is that the sidewalls are notoriously thin, and that is something that carries through and I've done, like I said, I'm a tire nerd. I've probably run 50 different tires on my vehicles, plus the ATVs. That's a whole different tire ballgame. And the Duratracs, from my research and my experience, the sidewalls are notoriously thin. They puncture and they get pinches and whatnot. And this new Territory MT seems to be the same. It also, in my experience, doesn't clean out well from mud at all. So, it's a Sasquatch. So they're 35 by 12 and a half.
Yeah, I should know that. That's all I have to say about that.
I have the Google, so I will find it.
Yeah.
Why are you asking me when you've got Google? I don't know my own car. What
315/70.
Is that? Oh, thank you. over the years, I've heard so many good things about the KO2s. In fact, our mutual friend Jeff Glucker, he's like, "Hey, why don't you just reach out to BFG and just see if they'll send you some tires?" And they did. I'll be damned. And so we're really excited. We just popped them on, and like my big questions are like, any difference in like street ability? Is it going to be like an increase in noise? Is there any going to be kind of any effect at all on like fuel economy, which is always abysmal with the Bronco, that kind of stuff? But also like you know, long term durability. How's it going to deal with you know, like we're not gnarly people, but there's so many trails around here that I like the confidence of being able to go out and you know, not fear for, you know, like our tires. And I do know that Wrangler 4xe we drove was rocking KO2s. I thought they did a really great job. Like I had a pretty great experience. So we're dabbling in KO2 life. And then I think the only other mod that we have, MagnaFlow reached out and they're like, "Hey, would you be interested in?" And so that might happen. We might like pop on a MagnaFlow exhaust, which is very low on the list of things I thought about doing. But it's like, there's something there.
Be careful.
Yeah. Wait. What do you got?
I love MagnaFlow and I've had MagnaFlow mufflers. I would be weary of the soft top and resonance, but
yes,
again, like the Bronco, the turbocharged Bronco world is different from the V8 MagnaFlow world that I'm most familiar with, so you know, go for it is really what I'm saying.
Well, one caveat is that everywhere we drive in the Bronco is like 35 miles an hour on a winding mountain road, so it's not like we're hauling, you know, like 80 miles an hour like with a steady state you know load. It's just it was driving this daisy around here, so that's the only other one that popped up.
Let's talk off air, because MagnaFlow actually is one of two, possibly three companies that are doing exhaust for the GX, and they have this awesome overlander exhaust with a high mounted turn down tip behind the rear axle, and I would like to talk to them, so let's have a conversation. Anyways, back to the KO2s, because I again could spend almost all of our podcast time talking about tires. So how many miles have you put on the KO2s since swapping over them?
Like 50. It like just happened.
Oh, okay. So here's my predictions. And do you know, are they C load rated or D?
Can Google answer that?
No, probably not. You're probably going to have to check sidewall. So my prediction is it's going to be better on road, probably quieter and better cornering characteristics and just a little softer. Just based on the tread profile. If it's the same low rating across them, I think your gas miles will probably get a little better because they're probably a little bit lighter. Probably, I mean, wet, you know, performance in California is kind of a joke, but it's probably comparable.
Yeah.
The video was probably in snow, Ross.
I meant rain.
Micah gets precipitation. He's not all the way down there where there's no precipitation.
We're in a special spot, but
The tires will probably perform off-road the same as the Goodyears and on-road better, which...
Cool.
You know.
That sounds like a good combination. Yeah. I have Ross objections to that.
Yeah. Ross has run them before. I had them on a 94 Lane Cruiser for a really long time. I absolutely loved them. They were the most, they were quiet, not too loud on highway, off road, like in the snow. I absolutely love them on that Lane Cruiser in the snow because it was four wheel drift everywhere I wanted. when I wanted, not just like, oh my gosh, what's happening? They like
they're controllable.
Yes, I big fan of the KO2s.
Awesome. Last thing about the KO2s, I don't know if you guys saw, Ranger Raptor was spotted on the production line with KO3s.
I was saying that's got to be coming soon. We've been hearing about it for like a year or two.
Very soon. Yeah, that should be good. So,
which they debuted the KO2 by dropping it out of an airplane and letting it bounce and then mounting it to a vehicle and then driving off. So I'm kind of excited to see how they debut the KO3.
I was hoping something would happen at Hammers this week, but it doesn't seem, I don't know, maybe, you know, we're coming up on auto show season. So we'll, if it is this year, we'll inevitably see it this year. It's crazy though, because the KO2 has only been out for what, like 8 years? Ish, seven, something like that, and the original BFG all-terrain was like 20 something years, you know, that it was around. But I don't know, Dire Tech is, it's quick. So Micah, you drove a bunch of Toyota stuff that we want to talk about, the LX and the Sequoia and the Tundra TRD Pro, and I drove the Tundra, but I want to hear about TRD and
vehicles. Okay, so thoughts about the Lexus. When I drove the first one originally for my review for Kelly Blue Book, I was driving the ultra luxury version, which is the one that has like just captain's chairs in the back that you don't have a third row, and it's made to be like leaned back, and it's very luxurious and whatever. And like, as you guys know, I'm a pilot, and I'd like to think I'm relatively immune to motion sickness, but driving that thing around, it was so like kind of lumbering, and the way just sort of moves back and forth. And I think also kind of going back to the earlier discussion of sight picture, when you're looking forward, you see the hood line and it's framed by the A pillars. It just feels like the world's doing this, like I'm like in a cruise ship or something in the North Sea. And I really didn't like it driving it. It was problematic. It was the rare vehicle that I drove everywhere in the sportiest of sport modes, and even then it still felt a bit much. Whereas the one we drove recently for my personal channel was the LX600 F Sport, and it's got the F Sport tuned suspension, and it felt more planted. There was less of that kind of like lumbering body movement, though it wasn't like completely devoid of it. So but you know, it's fine.
It's fine.
I think it looks weird too. I mean, it does look weird. like the nose. I mean, I think the F Sport is the best version too, because if you look at the grill, I think it's the more tasteful of the most tasteful of the lineup. So when I got out of that thing, though, it didn't strike me as like I need to spend $106,000 on the thing. But that's because I don't know. It's just, I keep thinking of all the opportunity costs wrapped up in getting one of those. I don't know.
Had you driven an LX 570 or like a late 200 series Land Cruiser?
Yes. Yes. It had been a while since I drove an older LX, but yeah, I have exposure to the whole lineup. Oh, and you wanted me to say something about it?
Yeah. I don't want to kick Lexus under the bus here, but like everybody says kind of the same thing, which is like, it's the same thing with the Porsches. The revision, the 0.2 is the one to get, you know, like they make such a big leap between iterations, and God, I don't want to shit on Lexus because I own one.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. I think like what you have to account for is the modifier of Toyota and Lexus people, which is that there's a huge bump in satisfaction strictly because of the brand. Like there's a huge brand halo for both Lexus and Toyota, and that's a real thing, and it's like that's not invalid at all. Like sure, it's great, you love your Toyota, you love your Lexus, and I think that goes a long way. But if you took all the badges away and you took away any awareness of brand history, and then you drove the LX, and then you asked me like, yeah, it's like, is this worth, you know, $106,000 as equipped? I don't know if it is.
I feel like prices have gone so high so fast that even for enthusiasts and people that work in the industry, like we can't really process what cost is anymore, like what features we're getting for the increased costs. Like where we all have these memories of these numbers in the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s. Now we're over $100,000 for Wagoneers, Yukon Denali Ultimates, Escalades, Land Cruisers, and the LX. Like, it's so much money.
Chris, we've been like tracking this as we've done the podcast, you know, like when we started, it was, what was the joke? Like 40 is new 30. And then by the time last year came around, it was 50 is the new 30, you know?
Exactly.
So 106 for an LX. Like the thing
and
is,
they'll get it.
Like we're, you know, we all look at this like both subjectively and objectively, but the person going in to buy it, who's just turning in the lease on their 570, is just gonna, okay, yeah, fine, whatever, you know, yeah, like sign papers. So
I'm not there yet.
There's an entire category of buyer that money means less to them. Like each individual dollar doesn't have the same value because they just have a lot of dollars. And for those people, like, you know, buying a Lexus LX is fine. But like for people like us who have to make choices between one thing and the other, then I can't help but do the math and think, what could I get instead of that? So by the way, you mentioned the Tundra, and I did want to quickly. Oh well, that's
for 106 grand Raptor,
but. Yeah, that seems like a good one. We drove the Tundra as well recently, and we really liked it. Like we had a really great experience in it, I think in many ways it was kind of like the it felt sort of untrucky in a lot of ways. I like the hybrid powertrain. One big complaint, and this is a weird one, and I'm not sure how much it resonates with like normal drivers, but the artificial sound that's created by the audio system to fool you into thinking it's a V8.
The thing that occurred
to me is that like if you are driving it and you're like, oh, I'm going to get this guy's attention, you're like, whoa, you know, or like you like kind of get on it. Mm-hmm. You might think your sound profile is one thing, but it's not. It's a lie. It's like, you know, like guys who ride Harleys. And it's it's like, you know, loud pipes save lives. Like if you think the world hears you like you hear you, it doesn't. And it's really funny because like you can't turn it off. Like I started digging into the boards and it's like there's legend that if you go to the dealership and you tell them to like turn off this feature, like they can kind of get into the computer and do some stuff. But so the artificial noise, like it's fine. They're trying to go for a vibe. They're trying to make it sound like something it's not, but whatever. Channel I don't 5, care about 7. That. But yeah. Yes, exactly. But that thing where I don't want to fool myself into thinking other people are hearing me the way I'm hearing me.
So Chris and I've talked about this because I had a non-hybrid new Tundra, non-TRD, it was, you know, like a mid-tier truck. And I got in it and I accelerated up my street and I stopped and put it in park. I was like, what the fuck is happening? And my first thought, my literal first thought was, okay, so in the fifth gen Camaro, there was the fuse for the valve on the exhaust that you could pull so that it would just keep the exhaust valve open the whole time. Mm-hmm. Is there something like that for this where you can make it not sound like a V8, but because it's all synthetic and all piped through the speakers and, you know, like based on RPM and everything, it is integrated into the truck's brain. I'm glad you noticed the same thing because I thought I was crazy for about 300 feet. And then quickly Google told me I was not crazy. So
yeah, you have to start doing that thing where like you rev it with the windows up and then you rev it with the windows down. You're like, it's not the same thing. I don't know where that noise is coming from. JBL. So
we've heard them referred to as JBL lifestyle stereos. Trucks.
It's not good.
So we've heard them referred to as more of a lifestyle truck honestly, right like, now. It's like, not as capable. Like that's where we've been getting crossed up with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess it depends on like how you're defining like lifestyle, but it does tow 12,000 pounds. I mean, like if your lifestyle involves towing, that's kind of a truck thing to do, and it can.
The TRD,
even the TRD.
I don't know.
No, TRD. It's with the 4x2 double cab. But I mean, like you can still tow plenty with the Tundra as a model. Like TRD, I mean, I think it's like, I found it very livable. It tells you that we're not really truck people because the ones we like the most tend to be the least truck-like. And I recognize that is my bias, I enjoyed driving it.
I don't think you're alone. I think that's definitely the market. They're going to sell a crap ton of them because it doesn't drive like a truck. Mm-hmm. Like.
Totally. Well, even though the fake engine noise is bizarre, like there's sort of an effortless quality to the propulsion. I found like the steering is kind of very like light, almost kind of sprightly in many ways. Like so I had a great time driving the thing. It was like very livable, again by kind of that anti-truck standard. And then like for off-roading, only thing I noticed is we went down that same hill that we took the Wrangler 4xe up. We dubbed it Museo Hill. And the only challenge was rear overhang was a little bit of an issue, you know, and it's like, well, that's to be expected.
So, yeah, the exhaust and that rear bottom of the bumper in the back is, it's low.
Yeah, yeah. So, and it's like, what I don't want to do is return a press truck and, you know, like with parts scraped off. So that was a little bit,
that's what launches are for.
Totally. Oh, I love a launch. They'll have you do all sorts of things you'd never do in real life.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of metal on rock noise happening here. Is that okay? Like, nah, it's cool. Keep them coming. Okay.
But okay. So you've driven the Tundra and the Sequoia, but what I find as being interesting and weird is that for a duration, how do I phrase this? People's purpose in buying vehicles was to buy something the truckiest, you know, the most overtly ostentatious, you know, and Toyota leaned into that like visually, but not at all really like mechanically. And they've by doing the hybrid and doing the twin turbo V6, they've almost kind of reeled back from what, you know, companies like Ram, you know, is still doing, and even Chevy to an extent, even though they have, you know, a turbo 4 and rest in peace the baby Turbo Max. But yeah, it's so interesting because you said you like it because it isn't necessarily the most truck-like, even though the way they've designed it, they can market it as that. You know, it's kind of, we're seeing a divergence between like realism and what the road is.
I mean, taking that concept, it's almost as though the truck for a very long time has been a proxy for one's masculinity. And if you imagine have that. A truck that's too soft, that that might somehow threaten your sense of identity. I remember doing quite a few reviews where it's like I would mention like, other trucks have a damped tailgate, but this one does not. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, look at this guy. He needs a damped tailgate. Like, ooh, oh no, you're good. And it's like, it's funny because like, there's that kind of like visceral reaction. I'm like, why are you reacting so strongly about a feature that like makes it better? Why is it a problem if the there's more function, or why is it a problem if the interior is more indulgent? And it's weird too because there's these two simultaneous trains of thought where it's like, my truck can't be soft. Also, I'm going to spend $80,000 on getting something with the stitched King Ranch logo on it, and it's going to be the most you know, elite indulgent truck ever. Well, and so it's like, it's like, it's almost like we haven't come to grips with the fact that like, if we can be indulgent in this space, we can also be indulgent in this space too. It doesn't have to ride terribly. It can ride great. Like, it can be capable, and it can also like it's funny. I think we're just, I think it's an introspective moment we need to have about trucks. And I don't know if we're ready to have that conversation yet.
So, I mean, this is something that really dips into the, sorry, Chris, I cut you off. But
no, I was just say some of us are still scared.
Yeah. And this really dips into the psyche of the, like, narrowing the funnel down from the American to the American vehicle buyer, to the American truck buyer, to the American truck user. And like, it falls into that category of like, are you doing this for your own machismo, or you like, can you just look at things from the scope of, I just want the best for everybody, you know? And like, if two people are living the same lives and one of them has a truck that has a damp tailgate, you know, and a better ride, like, why wouldn't you want that better thing for that person? And I mean, Micah, to your point, like a lot of people in this space still are stuck in that past of like, oh, I'm harder than you, you know? Oh God, that came up.
Yeah, but I'm going to quickly distract from that comment by pointing out.
No, let's pretend I never said that. And if Chris clips that for thing, then I'm
not clipping that one.
That was an AI. Thank
you. But there is an inherent friction between the truck equals tough, and also in the modern era, truck equals technology leader. There is so much advancement and technology crammed in. It's like, it's truly like the full size pickup truck segment is like the flagship for most manufacturers, where it's like, how many cameras can you get on a Chevy Silverado? Like it's something like 8 cameras. Like you can see the bed, you can see all around, you can put one on the back of the
on the trailer.
So the virtual translucent trailer effect, and it's like, just look at the tailgates, like how many ways can you use a multi-pro like tailgate? It's just, it's crazy. So
too many.
I think we need to have a reckoning with I think what we need to come to realize is that you can be tough and also be intelligent. We call that the Mike Amusio effect.
Trademark brand. Have you had any adverse reactions or anything like what we've discussed over the last little while in regards to the Bronco? You know, like, I mean, people, you know, the mentality of pickup owners, you know, it's.
Yeah. It's I would say that any negativity I've gotten related to the Bronco is probably we've created some pretty solid opportunities for people who bought other products to dunk on the Bronco. It's because we explicitly track any issues we have. Like that's one part of our ownership experience. And it's like, we've covered the things we like, but people gravitate towards the things that have gone wrong. And so we just did a video, like an 18,000 mile update, kind of talking about all the stuff. And people are like, wouldn't buy that piece of crap. Like, sure, I'm glad I bought a Toyota. And it's like, that's fine. I get it. Like that makes perfect sense. Like, but like realistically, like we've had a pretty good ownership experience. We knew we were buying a first year model, and you know that there's going to be some, birthing pains when you introduce a new vehicle. And what I have found is that everything we've had go wrong is minor and fixable. And those are kind of the things. It's like, if we had like a problem like they were having with the 2.7 liter, where it's like, oh no, engines are blowing up. If our engine blew up, we'd be having a very different conversation right now. we haven't had anything catastrophic. And truly, for like how we live, the Bronco is a perfect fit, much more so than the Wrangler. Most of our time is spent on road, like driving that Wrangler 4xe, fantastic off-road. The ability to do this with zero lateral steering, it's just like we're just going down the street, you can do this, and you can feel the kind of slight shimmy of like a front front axle.
Yes.
Like you can feel all that stuff, and then you get in the Bronco and it just tracks true. It's not busy, it's not fatiguing, and it's like, for our purpose, it makes perfect sense. I understand there are other purposes out there. I'm really happy with the Bronco, and I also appreciate that if you bought another product for whatever reason, there's enough to latch onto to validate your opinion. As long as you leave a comment and you engage with the video, I don't care what you think.
There you go. Sell it.
Just spoken like a true YouTuber.
Seriously. Have you noticed though?
Like and subscribe.
In the community of automotive journalists and people associated with the automotive media, and this might just be something that I noticed because despite my loathing of people and the world and the way things largely are, I try to be an optimist, but have you noticed that the automotive public in the semi and also fully professional sense can find something good about every vehicle? Like, we all have grown up with the tropes of, you know, like Mopar, no car, you know, like I'll only buy a Chevy or I'll only own Jeeps until I die, that kind of stuff. But, you know, to your testament and hopefully everybody listening, like, you have a Bronco, you can also find good things about the Jeep. Jeep owners will hopefully find good things about the Bronco, you know, and in our little weird community that it is, there's something good to take away from everything on sale today. And the small distinctions and the big distinctions are kind of what makes the whole thing exciting.
So not to get too highfalutin, but what I have noticed is that when you have a subject where there's complexity, that could be political, that could be spiritual, that could be automotive, whatever it is you're talking about, if you have enough data points, you will be able to cherry pick data points that support your perspective. And that is a way to be if you want to protect your ego. But if you want to seek the truth and if you want to be helpful, then it's important to consider all of the data points and then consider how those data points overlay on people's needs. So if I'm rock crawling, I should probably own a Wrangler. That's probably a better platform than owning a Bronco. Mm-hmm. Like if my number one priority is pure reliability, it's stupid for me to have a 2.3 liter turbocharged Ford engine in the car I'm driving. Like it probably makes sense for me to buy something like a 4Runner. If my top priority is on-road comfort and I'd like some sort of modern technology and I like the aesthetic of a reborn Bronco, I should probably drive a Bronco. And for every single vehicle in that trifecta, there are positives and negatives. And when we do reviews, when I'm doing a review for Kelley Blue Book or I'm doing a review for with my family, we have to look at all of those little data points. We can't just like say, mm-hmm. like, we're just gonna talk about the stuff that we like, or we just don't like that car, so we're gonna find all the bad stuff. You have to look at it holistically. And mm-hmm. I kind of wish, if I had one wish for the world, and I'm gonna express it here with you guys, off the road again. I wish that we could look at all of the data and recognize that even if there are negatives, it doesn't devalue your perspective. You can like something or dislike something and also know it in its fullness. Mm-hmm. So I think with cars in particular, if you buy something, you're naturally inclined to defend it because your ego is tied up in the decision you've made. But mm-hmm. As a car reviewer, I don't give a shit. Like, I drive everything. And like, everything has some good, everything has some bad. Even the lowly Mitsubishi Mirage, there is an audience for that because they got great financing at the dealership and they just want a warranty. And they kind of think the 3 liter or the 3 cylinder engine sounds growly and kind of
cool. And our future spec like, series, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah.
Once we get land, Micah can fly in and we'll have our Mirage race series in the dirt. It'll be great.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I love this plan.
Oh, man.
But technically, you've already been to the land that I would go to, which was Dave's in Texas. So
true.
Oh, yeah. Very oh, my true. Gosh. Oh, I mean, truly, if you guys wind up doing like a Mirage spec series out in at Dave's place, I'll have to motor on in. Oh, that seems like a damn fine time.
I'm trying to piece together my memory here. Was that you that Buzz the Everyday Driver guys as they were?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we bought our chopper in Dallas and then we spent one night in Austin, and then under our departure flight we had to make our way west. But I was like, we're like a 15-minute flight you know, from Texas Dave's place. We got to fly over. I've been once before to visit him like on the ground, and I was like, I gotta see the place from the air. I did not know Everyday Driver was going to be there, and I did not know I'd be bothering them, but we did a little lap around, and in fact it's in our video. We did a video flying our chopper back west from Dallas, from Texas to California, and so that does appear in there. So, and that that's is a good awesome. Natural lead-in, because I know we're probably getting late on time, but you did in the outline ask about the helicopter and if you've done any like fun heli overlanding adventures, and the answer is no. I broke my hand in December, and I'm just now kind of getting back and being functional.
What'd you do?
You are good. I broke my hand going over the handlebars on my e-bike. It was like a 3 foot drop, not that big of a deal, but went off the drop and then just boop, right over. So should have given myself a little more time to ease back into biking after having, you know, been off two wheels for like a month. So yeah, anyways, first broken hand too.
Nice.
Yeah. First broken bone.
First wow. Regional. Oh man. Well,
that's impressive.
I've I've taken some chances throughout life, and it's crazy it finally caught up with me. So yeah, but broken bone, which meant I couldn't fly for a little while. And so I think maybe in springtime will be a good time to maybe try out some heli camp.
Got any destinations on your radar?
That's the trick. See, so like finding a place that you'd actually want to go to, that's like BLM land, so no one's going to give you guff for landing there. So one thing that's really interesting about the helicopter community is that it's kind of like a secret society. We're like, there are like land for people real. Have landing zones, and like they're like, hey, there's like an old copper mine. If you go here, and I'll give you the location, but don't share it with anybody, you know? And so it's like, if you're kind of in, you can find all those spots. So one of the things I've been working on is being a little more in to the helicopter community. So I have people I can talk to. And so I actually do have a friend who is a helicopter pilot who has a rich history of heli camping. So I've got some knowledge I can tap into, but I'll never tell you guys about it.
That's completely fine.
Yeah, I don't think that's a problem that Chris or I are going to have.
Just take me with you once. I don't need to know where we're going. Ooh, I just want to go.
I do.
Yeah.
In New York, know of a very remote helipad. Should, for whatever reason, you make it, you know, 2,900 miles across the country.
Dude, it took him 4 days to get from Texas to California.
So, yeah, but I do know of a deep woods mountain helipad. Of nature, so I'll send you a picture next time. That's the kind of stuff with no context. So you'll have to find this if you want.
that kind of stuff. The remote landings and kind of like that accessibility to places where you know, normal people can't get. That is really the magic of the helicopter life. So, that's
crazy.
Good.
That's crazy.
The red one on the size of that rock, it's intense.
I think that is iFly Heli's H-130. Okay. So he's a guy named, I saw him at Heli Expo last year. Yeah, if you follow iFly Heli, I think that's his bird. That is, by the way, an incredibly well-outfitted bird. He's got like cameras all around it, so he can like see like his landing zone from the tail.
That's how he lands on something like a rig. That rock.
Yeah, dude, New York Gallant. He's out of Utah, and that thing is absolutely wicked.
Yeah, I was geeking out last week over the Black Rifle helicopter that Travis jumped over in Canada.
Which is the same helicopter that they dropped coffee beans down to Dave and the Black Rifle. I believe he's the owner in the the Roush F-150 truck in there. Yep. That promo. Yeah,
that was a pucker moment. When you see it the angle that isn't the Larry Chen angle.
Yeah. The last bit of joy I'll share with you guys is introducing my daughter to the Gymkhana series through that one. Oh my gosh.
Through
the Travis one, like that being kind of her introduction, I thought, man, this is setting a pretty strong hook because it just unveils itself so like, huh, wow, what, huh, jump in a helicopter, wow. Mm-hmm. That one was so good. But yeah, it was a really good entree into like the world that Ken Block built and, you know, like tragic timing, you know, with how that you know, wound up. But, but yeah, man, like that whole series and getting to introduce my daughter to it and have her like really like connect with it was a great joy. And anytime they cram a little helicopter into it, that makes me even happier.
Well, there was more than a little in this one.
Yeah.
He just grabs on at the end and leaves.
After jumping. So good. I'm going to wrap up the show. So you can rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts, please. You can like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can like and subscribe to Micah's YouTube channel, which is Micah Musio. Micah Drives, Micah Flies. Both those searches will get you to Micah. And then Kelly Blue Book. Then you can follow The Hooniverse on Twitter, The Real Hooniverse on Instagram. Ross is No Not Like the One from Friends. I'm at Overland Indian Dad, and we did a show. Thank you so much, Micah.
Thanks, Micah.
High fives, everybody.
Air five. Yeah.
Hey, I hear record. Oh, magic.